if this was perfect, it wouldn't be.
Hello, this is Pedro de Permit, and thank you for listening to the Scalf Podcast. I know I sure as hell would never listen to it, but enjoy it while it lasts.
Today's episode of the Scoffcast is brought to you by Squala. Squala is technical fishing gear built to keep you on the water longer. If you're fishing in real heat, check out the Soul Collection. It's lightweight, breathable, sun protection pieces that actually stay comfortable when the day gets brutally hot. And when the weather turns and the air cools off, the Carbon Jacket is the shell that never leaves your side. Light, tough, and ready for anything. I can attest to this. I've been fishing the Carbon Jacket for, I guess it's been a couple years now, and it has been my favorite lightweight raincoat. I live in a rainforest. We get more than 120 inches of rain a year, and it has been flawless for me. And I will say, I just got my hands on their RS jacket for the winter, and it is probably out of the box the best feeling wading coat I have ever put on. A lot of small details in there that when you get your hands on it, you'll be super impressed with. Squala is no gimmicks, no clutter, just real gear that works hard and keeps you fishing. That you can see the full lineup at squalafishing.com. Squala, it's built to fish.
On this episode of Carpacola's Reading Rainbow Trout, a Bathroom Listener, I'm going to read a story that I wrote that can be found on page 82 of issue 54. The title is The Potency of Well-Curated Christmas Gifts. What is a life without memory? Imagine life as a collection of present moments that punctuate meaning and worth from birth to expiration. The fly fishing life rarely chooses us, but in a series of moments, we select it as our preferred means of angling. The holidays are a highlight reel of these moments. When your parents curate the season, and the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ. When I was 13, my Aunt Taterbug gifted my grandfather Willie an Orvis 5-weight. He scarcely used the graphite rod before his stroke, but he was the jolliest benefactor of my life, known for his NewsHour happy hours, where his charcuterie boards were full of cheese spreads, pate, crab claws, and cold chicken wings. Us children were careful to avoid the bougie dog foods for Mickey the Yorkie, a response to the mistake of mistakes, the crunch of kibble. We learned to cast Willie's Orvis rod on the dock of Lake Gunnersville by casting and hauling to the brim beds. This work showed proof of my dedication to a sports dynamism, which would move from frustration to competence. My father, Willie's boy, taught me many lessons. Through his storytelling, I came to know my progenitors. At Christmas time, a wool cowboy blanket taught my father that packages can be deceiving. All of Willie's children were weighing their Christmas packages, and it appeared my father had the heaviest gift. The wool cowboy blanket would stay in the family for years at our Gunnersville Lake compound. This year, after my father's passing, I reluctantly disposed of the blanket after it sat outside mildewing in several rains, waiting for its last use. During my childhood, my parents would gather on Christmas morning in spite of their acrimonious divorce. They would create the work of love by preparing the living room together. My sister and I would come down the steps from our rooms with all the excited fervor of children of God. We always wished the gift would be their reunited love for one another, but it never was, and we would always have the loot as a consolation. One year, I ruined my sister's big gift. It was a life-sized, my-sized Barbie, roughly the height of a blonde little person. As she went into a room to try on Barbie's wedding dress, we burst into her changing room. In my malevolence, I took pictures of her with the naked Barbie, calling her a lesbian, as I had just learned the art of Big Brother bullying. As we aged, Christmas became more about spending time with family and the obligatory travel of the season. My father's birthday was early January. When my father turned 64, about a decade ago, I bought us a trip to Redfish in Hopedale, Louisiana with Captain Doug Henderson. It was the best gift I ever gave my father. He and I had been bone fishing a handful of times, but it had been a long 5 years since our last trip. After catching a few big ones, I wanted my father to take up the rod and stick one. His generosity to me on the bow was tinged with the wonder of not knowing if his knees would support his own balance on the bow. Doug stuck one in the gin-clear water of the Shandies and handed Dad the fly rod. He fought the fish masterfully and with confidence, stood in the cage taking a few laser shots at bulls. I heard Doug say, "Ooh, that might work." He stuck the fish and caught a fish that went 32 pounds. It was a birthday and Christmas miracle, and the last fish I saw Dad catch. He reminded me of the fish often, and whenever I went to Redfish, he would ask, "You didn't catch one over 30, did you?" "No, Dad, I never did." I miss him terribly during the holidays, but now it is my turn to curate for my son the meaning of Christmas. My wife does the shopping, I assemble the many parted gifts, and am inspired by the stories of our past and the lore of A Christmas Story. He isn't old enough for a fly rod, but I can work on his gun safety with a Red Ryder BB gun. Maybe, just maybe, he will learn to handle it like I hope he will someday handle a new fly rod. Objects and gifted ones have the effective power to not only be made for commerce, but also make us who we are. Here's hoping that this will be a magical source for many a fly angler, and may your Christmas sales be as miraculous as the season. The next story I want to read is by Gecko, and it's titled Love Stung, found on page 88 to 89. Here's a story of young love, and how a higher power makes no mistakes, except sometimes. My experience with the one that got away. It was 2023. I had just moved to the Sunshine State after picking up my hot new custom skiff. I was as eligible a bachelor as there was in North Florida, just missing a lab named after a country legend and a diesel with some blacked out wheels. But hey, you can't have it all. And I had most of it. Anyhow, one summer evening, I left work around 5 to start my nightly routine, 20 push-ups, a YouTube Lightroom tutorial, and a 20-minute hinge sesh. It's Florida, so you know what to expect. Liberals swipe left. Under 6 foot, swipe left. Baja Blast or swipe left. Morgan Wallen is greater than 3. Slim pickings for a city boy like myself, sitting at just under 5'10", with a Prilosec script that hopes to keep me far away from any Baja anythings. But one Wednesday evening, I found her. Pretty, tall, no mention of height requirements, and a picture of a fish. She was holding this rainbow trout like you would a python, and she may have put it in the microwave prior to the click, but it didn't matter to me. A fish was a fish, and I planned to catch her like I had many before. I swiped right, and we matched. I told her that the C in ZCB stands for custom, and that I didn't have a diesel right now, but I had one on order at only 26% APR. She met me at the ramp, 24 twisted T's in hand. She looked like a winner walking down that dock. We hopped in the skiff, and I proceeded to pole her onto flats with no fish as she barely casted the leader out of the guides. Half a case of teas in, we were starting to have a fine time. She talked, I listened, When it got quiet, I pointed out a fake tail or described some nervous water. Best date ever, so far. The sun went down, and I prepared for my final act. Bioluminescence. She had no idea. I ripped the skiff across the flats, jumping mullet and baitfish as we avatared waves of blue through the night. We were falling in love. I told her of a small sand beach island. She wanted to go, and when we got there, she wanted to skinny dip. I felt like some sort of magician. My plan had worked. All my preparation, fake pointing, and serious David Mangum-inspired facial expressions while driving were about to pay off. I took my pants off and jumped in, waiting on her arrival. She walked elegantly towards me as I waited to embrace her like she had that dying rainbow trout. Only feet away, she fell and cried out, "My legs! My foot!" Whimpering in distress, taken over with pain, tears came immediately. "Get my phone," she proceeded to call her mom, sniffling, screaming, and crying. The date of my dreams was over. She had stepped on a stingray. I have another girlfriend now. The next story is titled Gearack by Scott Stevenson, Merchant of Waverly. It can be found on page 108 to 109. I had read a few of John Gearack's books, but I couldn't recall which ones the day I heard the news of his passing. I have a terrible memory that works sporadically at best, but a wave of guilt or embarrassment or maybe both passed over me that day in October. You couldn't, and still can't, walk in a fly shop and not see his stuff on the shelves. He's by far the most known fly fishing author, I'd say, in the last 40 years within the fly fishing community. Definitely one of, if not the most prolific fly fishing writer of our time. Maybe the contrarian in me wanted to read other authors all this time. I'm weird. I don't know why I didn't read all his books. I tried to explain it away. I mean, I have read most of the works of his buddies like James Babb and, of course, the great Thomas McGuane. I used to fall asleep in the 90s to VHS copies of A.K. Best teaching me how to tie parachutes. LaFontaine, Whitlock, all his buddies. But for some reason or another, I passed over John. Maybe it was the catchy titles. Like I said, I'm weird. So this December, I decided I was going to read or reread every work he wrote. I'm even going to try and hunt down the poetry books if I can find them. As of the last week in February when I'm writing this, I have read 7, about one per week, and I should finish my New Year's resolution by the end of April at this pace. One of the few resolutions I might actually accomplish. I've read a few books by others sprinkled in there to break up the flow a bit, but I must say I'm enjoying every word. And feeling like a damn fool for not doing this sooner, as they were released. John loved old trucks. In fact, he took tremendous pride in driving old pickups with high mileage. I was asked by a coworker last week when I was going to get a new truck. My Toyota is about to hit the 250,000 mark. I looked at him incredulously and said, quote, "I hope I get 10 more years with this one," end quote. And immediately thought of John. John's writing style leans more on the humorous side without trying to be obvious about it. I have found myself laughing out loud a few times per book. Maybe his attitude, outlook, and opinions hit a little close to home. I'm at the age when he was in his prime, cranking out books, and I must say that we have a lot of the same thoughts. Maybe that is also just an age thing. Either way, it feels like I might be doing something right. John's obsession with bamboo makes me feel a little better about my own personal insatiable thirst for fishing gear. I also appreciate his outlook on flies and fly tying. He seems like he walked the line between fanatical and down-to-earth quite well when it came to patterns, materials, pattern efficiency, and tradition. One other thing that has surprised me the most is that I seem to enjoy his more informational writing more than anything. I haven't read Rat Lake yet, which a great deal of fishy folks think might be his best work. My favorite so far has been Fly Fishing Small Streams, a how-to guide on fishing the stuff that most folks ignore. I cannot wait to wade a few mountain streams for brookies this year. But most of all, I'm excited about getting up in the Alabama mountains for some red eyes. I would have loved to have taken John fishing for red eyes. I'm also about to purchase a coffee pot to take on outings this year. I found myself loving every creekside coffee break he took, whether solo fishing or with a couple of buddies. The slowing it down really appeals to me. I have spent the last 30 plus years covering the most water at the most maniacal pace I could muster. I'm ready to get a little more introspective, retrospective, and just plain spective with my time on the water. Maybe find a good rock in the middle of the river and sit a spell. Thank you, John, for taking us along on your adventures.
Thanks for tuning in today. Just like when you were a kid, it's just better to be read to. But don't forget, every single one of these stories has imagery to go along with it. Go back to the issue and the page that John references, and you can see that. Till next time.